Welcome to episode 218 of Red Bull Rewind. My name is Spencer Lugenbeel, and today, my guest on today's show is someone who is a friend of the podcast, friend of In the Money. You'll see his pick four sequence picks all over the Santa Anita website. It's Frank Scatone. Me and Frank go over three races from this past Saturday at Santa Anita. Those races were 9, 10, and 11, and some angles that we talk about are how important it is to have prior good form on down-the-hill races on the turf course of Santa Anita, and also if you can find certain cutbacks or stretch-outs within a horse's PPs that show success, and they're doing that same move today, these are the type of horses that can show value. This is Red Board Rewind. It's the same old story. And now I would like to welcome in my special guest for this week's second edition of Red Board Rewind, someone who, if I'm on the West Coast, got to have him on to talk about some preps, Frank Scatone. Frank, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. I always love doing this show because I often say sometimes the best handicapping you could ever do is after the race, because you could take that information that you just saw, take notes, and use it moving forward. So you forced me to really go back and analyze my play. I love it.
You know, and this is not to pat myself on the back, but I still laugh all the time. The whole reason this show even got invented was because I went to Pete and Jake and I said, I can only listen to you guys talk about, you know, graded stake races so many times going back and forth from Saratoga every year. But it was always that podcast and the same stuff still going over, like, you know, the late pick four. There was not really a talk of, you know, claiming races, et cetera. And I find it just so funny, 4 years in, there still really isn't another podcast that really dives deep into races after. There might be segments, but I can't think of a horse racing pod that really does, you know, what I do. So it's kind of funny to end up in a niche part of the arena, as they say, and still not have any competition. It's pretty weird.
No, I love it. But what I always like to say is, like, it ain't Red Boarding if you were right. So
I mean, listen,
and all my picks are out there in public, so we can talk about that. I wasn't right about all the races we're going to talk about, but I thought there were some interesting things on that Saturday Santa Anita card, and it was just an amazing day of racing. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you want to give. I just want to give a shout out to Santa Anita because I thought they did a terrific job this weekend. The vibe was incredible. We had big crowds out there. I went up for the whole weekend, and it gave me that nostalgic feel from when I was, you know, in my mid to late 20s going to the racetrack with Fornatel, and we'd walk in and, you know, everybody was so excited, and it really had, you know, either like a Del Mar or a Saratoga feel to it. It was like spring is here and summer's on the way. So it was just an awesome weekend all around.
I think too, and this is, you know, I've been trying to cover as much as I can with Santini and obviously all the other tracks around the country. I feel like this has been one of the more polarizing tracks where it's either super chalky and one or two long shots, but you don't really get to see that mix of, you know, $6, $12, and $25. It's either you're kind of going, you know, $420 to $550, and then it's, you know, you're into the high teens with a lot of the winners, which is interesting. And I think a lot of times when you have a track that focuses like that, it's not easy, but you can kind of pinpoint certain classifications or races where, oh, these are where a lot of the longer shots are coming from, and you can start to focus on those type of races.
Right, that's exactly it. You really need to pick and choose your spots. I mean, look, let's face it, it's a long meet. You know, we don't have the horse population out here like the circuits back east, so you have to be very selective with which races you get involved in, and you have to pick and choose your spots. And there's nothing wrong with passing four or five races to wait for that one race where you think you're going to get a price and you're going to get some value. So, you know, when you have a meet like this, that's sort of the bread and butter of the circuit because it runs so long and, you know, keeps everybody in business, you have to be patient and you have to be disciplined. It forces you to, otherwise, you're going to, even if you're right, you might only get, like you said, a short price, and you know you can't grind it out if you're just betting short prices. So you need that mix, and you got to take what the card gives you. And, mm-hmm. and like I said, it's okay to pass a couple of races to wait for that one spot where you can really swing.
I think you said such a key point there, the fact of passing races. A lot of people, they'll be upset, you know, oh, how many $4 horses can win? How many $5, $50 horses can win? And a lot of times, if you think the favorite's going to win, but you're still trying to beat it with three other horses, you probably either should have A, passed the race, or just know that, you know, chalk is not going to be the type of handicap you are. Listen, I you know, there's a reason there's a chalk eating weasel t-shirt out there for guys like me and JK. I have to be able to, you know, quote unquote, see the ball go through the hoop. If I'm 0 for 12 in my last 12 races, you are damn right I'm taking that 7 to 5 shot just to, you know, kind of get back into rhythm and just see where I'm going.
Sure.
And a lot of the times I'm more excited if I can find a 10 to 1 shot that, okay, maybe it runs second and I don't hit the win bet, but I'm more excited about doing that than, or finding a favorite and, you know, saying, oh, it won't hit the board. I want to see that happen more, not than having, you know, oh, I picked the even money shot. Like it's, I use those horses as more of, you know, getting back into rhythm than I do, you know, looking for them day in, day out.
Yeah, Spencer, I think you and I have a very similar approach and similar mindset. My natural instinct always is, you know, how can I beat this favorite? But sometimes I do it to a fault too much and I get stubborn. And there are times, like to your point, you say, you know what? Do you think the 7 to 5 can't lose? And maybe you think that 7 to 5 should be even money. That's tremendous value. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to bet a lot more to win what you want to win, but you're getting good value, even though it's the favorite. I think one of the, you know, we talk about, you know, strengths and weaknesses as a handicapper, and it's important to understand what you're good at. I think my two weaknesses as a handicapper is one, and Pete will tell you this, I might be a little too disciplined. I'm not aggressive enough. And there are spots where I really, really need to be aggressive. And I'm trying to work on that because every day it's a learning process. And then two, again, sometimes you just take the favorite and you move on. And, you know, if you have prices around it or whatever, you single it and you move on. I'm very stubborn about trying to beat the favorite. And I've missed out on a lot of really nice scores. You know, when my 10 to 1 runs second, to a very logical 7 to 5 shot. I mean, what's wrong with taking, you know, an $8, $10 exactor or whatever it might be and just crushing it, you know, if those are your two opinions in the race. So, you know, I try to be better about that, but, you know, easier said than done.
I've always said, and this is using, you know, old school, you know, Dick Mitchell, Barry Meadow type stuff. If you like two chalks and they're paying $10 for a buck for an exacta, I mean, you're getting technically 5 to 1. Like, I don't know what else you want from two logical horses than getting 5 to 1. You're not going to get that every time. You're going to get $7, $6, and $8. But, you know, as long as, you know, the CRWs aren't going to crush your exacta prices down last second, you're going to find that it'll pay 10, 20 bucks. And that can, you know, halt a losing day and, you know, make it a break even day. Listen, it's not fun to break even. I would rather lose or win than break even for some reason for me. It's just like even getting out of the hole, man.
You either want to be really right or really wrong.
Like
you don't want to be like middling.
No, I cause it just feels like the day got wasted and I just don't know what to do about that. But the last thing I wanted to bring up with you before we get started in the race is it is a race we're gonna talk about, you know, farther down in the pod. But I want to just talk about imagination for Bob Baffert. Maybe for everyone else who maybe has been living under a rock, Bob can't have horses over in the Triple Crown scene. Maybe not the last two legs, but the first leg of the Triple Crown, that being the Kentucky Derby. Yeah. Obviously won the San Felipe, now runs here. I mean, if they can't get points to get, I mean, I guess they're getting points just to run in the other two. Like what's the whole deal with that?
Well, I'll be the first one to tell you that I am probably the horse player who has the least interest in the Kentucky Derby until the week of the race.
I know which horses are
getting in and post positions and all that stuff. But from what I understand, you know, the points don't get redistributed. So let's say if Baffert wins one of these prep races, there are no points distributed to first place. But the second and third place finishers will get their points, whether it's 10 points or 8 points. I don't know the scoring system, but you know, so he could be blocking people from getting in the race by running his horses. Now, you could also look at it in a way, well, you know what? He's not eligible. His horses aren't eligible for the Derby. So you know that every horse he sends out in a prep race, you know, has to be fully cranked because he's not worried about the Kentucky Derby. He's in it to win it, you know? So you have, these are things that you have to factor in as a handicapper. The other thing is, you know, one of his owners, Zidane, just filed some kind of injunction or something or a lawsuit against Churchill Downs to let his horses run. So, you know, who the heck knows? A lot can happen between now and the first Saturday in May. So I always, as much as I love watching and handicapping the prep races, I don't get excited about a Derby horse until they draw the race and I know the post positions. So, you know, that's kind of where my head is at when it comes to the Derby.
One of my favorite quotes ever is the Derby is the most overanalyzed race of the entire year. And if people spent as much time as they did on the Derby as they did in the regular handicapping, there'd be more than 1% winners in horse racing.
I think you're right.
Let's jump into the first of these three races. I asked you to pick the races. You picked some good ones here. We're going to start with race number 9 from Santa Anita. It is the Grade 3 Monrova. About 6.5. We're going down the hill. One of my favorite types of races. And Frank, in this one, I was really just trying to stay away from AG Bullet. Not this one couldn't win, but I just wonder if for Richard Baltz, that 88 going, of course, again, down the hill, 2 for 2 at the distance, 3 for 3 at Santa Anita. I just wondered if this one was, you know, going to come back a little bit, second off a layoff. Maybe they fired just too good to be true on that first race out. I thought a horse like Get the Money on the outside with Dettori, Brian Corner, the workouts, man. When you see 2 back-to-back bullets like that and a nice 82 in the allowance, now we take the next step up into a race like the Grade 3. I just thought a horse like Get the Money was super interesting across the board in this race. What about you, Frank?
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons I picked this race, you know, it's part of the pick 4 sequence, so I really analyzed it. I love the downhill races. To me, they're the most fun races anywhere in America. It's such a unique configuration, and I love handicapping them, mostly because I have a little bit of a I think I have a little bit of an edge because the way I look at these races, I always go outside in because the outside posts are favorable because you got the dog leg. Inside horses have a very, very tough time winning over this course. I'm not saying they can't win, but more often than not, they have to be the best horse in the race to win from the rail. So I start from the outside and I always look for horses who have tactical speed. And number 8, Get the Money, was one of my A's. I thought 6-1 on the morning line was terrific. You know, I am typically a class handicapper, and I recognize the fact that she was moving up in class. But I thought that comeback race was terrific. You know, from May of 2023 to March 2024, I thought she improved her speed figures. She was drawn favorably. Mm-hmm. She had, you know, a win at 6.5 furlongs over this course. I thought 6-1 was great value on her, so she was one of my A's. I took the opposite approach that you did. I've always liked I know AG Bullet, but I'm going to call her Silver Bullet because, you know, AG is the chemical lettering for silver. So I believe her name is Silver Bullet, even though it's called AG Bullet. But anyway, this Silver Bullet is a Silver Bullet. I've always liked her. Ever since she got on turf, I paid attention to her. She rattled off 2 wins in a row, you know, 6.5 furlongs, a mile, tossed the Bourbonette. They pitched her too high. It was on synthetic. Something clearly went wrong. She hit the shelf for a while. I was with you. I was thinking, well, you know, was that the race? Because she ran really good in that comeback race. Is she going to regress today or is she going to move forward? And I was thinking to myself, well, you know what? That was a restricted stakes. That was probably just a prep for this. And she still won anyway by 1.25 lengths, beating 2 others who were in this race. So I thought it was a 2-horse race. I thought it was 6 and 8. And those were my 2 A's in the race. And I also played them in exactas. And I felt pretty good about my picks to start off the pick 4.
AG Bullet and Get the Money for Frank. For me, I'm just going to go with Get the Money to try and beat this favorite. Let's see who gets it done right now.
In the Monrovia, and it's a very even start. Graceland Gray, very quick, and quickly sprints up on the inside, but AG Bullet wants that lead too, and AG Bullet and Graceland Gray are going at it in the opening furlongs. Get the Money in a good spot third. Lucky Girl is fourth with four lengths to make up. It's another four to Chismosa, racing on the outside of Comanche Country. And at the back of the field is stretch running Miss Lizzie, who's about a dozen lengths off the lead. Graceland Gray has a narrow advantage, pressed by A.G. Bullet down the hill with Get the Money, three lengths back in third. Lucky Girl is fourth at this stage. Chismosa trying to make some headway from fifth. Six off the lead. Comanche Country and Miss Lizzie. They're at the top of the stretch. A.G. Bullet, Graceland Gray haven't given each other any breather whatsoever. A.G. Bullet takes the lead. Get the Money is in third. Lucky Girl in the center of the course inside the eighth pole. And A.G. Bullet pulls away from Graceland Gray in the center of the course. Chismosa, Miss Lizzie is flying through traffic, but it will be A.G. Bullet razor sharp in the Monrovia.
And it is A.G. Bullet getting the job done with a nice win mutual of $5. And I think when you look overall through the buyers, a 90 buyer improves again. Listen, Get the Money improved again, 86. There's not much I can ask for. Yes, a 13-1 kind of splits us and it's two chalky horses. Yeah. But I mean, at the end of the day, if you look through it, Miss Lizzie's done nothing wrong. 85, 84 in those last couple of races at 13-1. Maybe the value was in finding the longer shot and hooking it up with a favorite here. A.G. Bullet, kind of, you know, these are the type of horses that in the long run, I will bet against. I will continue. Listen, 2 for 2 and 3 for 3. Listen, 2 for 2, 3 for 3 at Tantanita, and this horse still goes off above even money. That's probably value. And I thought maybe this one would take a little bit more money. Miss Lizzie, like I had said, yeah, coming out of those same type of races, I think was the miss in the action here. And I mean, listen, 820 for a place bet. I talked about this last week, how you can still bet win place in this game and still do all right. Or you can play horses like this, you know, across the board, even 820 and $4 gets you double your money back. And last time I saw, when you get a 50% or, you know, just double your investment back, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah. You know, back to A.G. Bullet for a second, just based on paper, I probably would have agreed with you. This is the kind of horse I would like to beat. You know, just, but like I said, the reason I was on her, even as the favorite, was because I've always liked her. I've watched her. You know, I follow SoCal racing religiously. I cover it. It's my jam. So I know a lot of these horses. And sometimes you see a horse that just sticks with you. And this is one. I know, you know, she's had some physical issues, but when she runs her race, she's really good. And to me, you know, I really, really liked her comeback race. So, but I'm with you. That's typically the kind of horse I would try to take a stand against. And, you know, we got a good run for our money with the outside horse. Unfortunately, she was bet in half. I think other people saw what we saw, but I still think she was good value. And I know we got split in the exacta there, but I have no regrets the way I played that race.
And sometimes I think a lot of people, when they do, you know, the red boarding and stuff, they look for the mistakes they make. And sometimes you can just say, hang your head and be like, my horse ran as good as I thought it would run. It just wasn't good enough. You make the one or two notes in Formulator on, you know, what you think you could improve on, and you move on. I always tell people, if there's, you know, 10 races at Saratoga, there's probably 3 or 4 of them that I just kind of, you know, don't write a note about because I was just either, you know, didn't have anything to write or just kind of, you know, settled the way I kind of thought it would.
Yeah, we were a head away from, you know, a really nice exacta there with Get the Money underneath. So again, like I said, no regrets. I didn't really care for Ms. Lizzie. I didn't want to use her. I thought it was a 2-horse race and both my horses fired. But like you said, sometimes you just get beat. You know, it's that's racing. You got to turn the page.
Let's turn the page. Let's move on to race number 10, the Grade 1 Santanita Derby. 1.18 miles on the dirt. Obviously, we do have imagination that Bob Baffert horse in here won the San Felipe last time out. It's something that you had said, you know, these horses just, you know, they're ready to go. They're ready to fire. I just could not seemingly get away from Stronghold. And I cannot remember the last time I bet the Sumlin Derby horseback. This, for some reason, just seemed to be the one. I think the 1-64 Bullet at Santanita. And then obviously the 48 flat on the synth for Phil D'Amato. I just wonder, you see the, you know, the worst this one's ever run was at Churchill, a 78, and instead has gone 80, 82, 85, 89. Maybe not in that order, but we do have, you know, improved in the Bob Hopeful, did well in the Los Al Futurity. And usually 9 times out of 10, horses out of that Los Al, as you and me both know, don't run as well because they just seem to have an affinity for the Los Al surface. This one ran well at Sunland. Yes. I just thought if this one can improve again, and imagination is overly cranked, and Bob maybe just doesn't, you know, give a shit about it. I'm not saying that, you know, he doesn't, but I mean, a 96 here and this horse runs right back. I wonder if Stronghold could get the job done here. I thought we'd get a pretty decent price.
Yeah, I thought it was a two horse race. I was a little between Imagination and Stronghold, and I'll talk about them in a second. I was a little confused by Winstock only because, you know, the other Baffert, we talk about that all the time. Oh, when you think one of the Bafferts can't lose, it's the longer price one that wins. And this was 8-1 on the morning line, and Hernandez hopped on, and this horse beat Stronghold and yada, 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 and all that other stuff. But I couldn't get on that horse. So nothing clever. I thought Imagination and Stronghold were the two. But then again, you know, Imagination, even though with those gaudy buyer speed figures, this is not one of Baffert's better horses. You know, this is kind of like the B string. You know, he's just, it's not a typical Baffert pattern, but I had to use the horse. But like you said, I thought Stronghold was the most interesting horse in the race. I mean, look, this is not a typical Phil D'Amato horse, right? He's usually known for his turf horses. He's known for his imports. He's a grass train. Not that he can't win on dirt. It's just that typically his stock is more oriented towards turf, like the way Chad Brown used to be. And then all of a sudden, Chad Brown started to get dirt horses mm-hmm. that were actually bred to run on dirt. And look what he's done. I think we're seeing a similar pattern here with D'Amato. You know, he had a horse called Newgrange, who won a big race in the handicap division mm-hmm. earlier in the year that he developed. And now we have this horse Stronghold, and I think he's done a terrific job with him. I thought this horse was going to get a perfect stalking trip. You know, the Bafferts are always going to show speed, but if you just look at the PPs, this horse can just settle, relax, stalk the pace. Frazu could put him wherever he wants. And I thought he was going to move forward off that Sunland Derby effort. You know, I like I said, I just think, like you mentioned, the progression of speed figures and the way D'Amato has campaigned this horse, I thought it was a two-horse race. I didn't have anything clever in here, but I picked the race because, you know, we do need to talk about it because it's the Santa Anita Derby, and, you know, we might be seeing these horses. I will certainly see Stronghold in the Derby if that horse stays sound. You know, we talked about Baffert horses not being able to go, but you got the Preakness and the Belmont to consider. So it's a race you have to pay attention to, even if you're not betting it. But my A's in this race were the 3 Stronghold and the 4 Imagination. And I did use Winstock as a B just because the thought of losing to a Baffert Hernandez horse at a good price wouldn't have sat well with me. So I even though I didn't really, really like the horse, and I shouldn't be saying that because you're not supposed to bet horses you really don't like, but sometimes, you know, you want to protect yourself. So that's how I played the race.
Imagination, Stronghold, the 2 A's for Frank. I'm going to try and get the job done with Stronghold. Let's see if we get the job done right now.
They're off in the Santa Anita Derby, and Stronghold gets the first call. EJ won the cup. Imagination broke beautifully in between them and puts his head in front. Now Tapelo rushes up along the inside to engage Imagination. And just behind them, Winstock 5th through the opening furlong. Tasuto outside Curlin's Chaos. McVeigh 3 wide and last. Tapelo will be the pace setter. Opens up 2 on Imagination 2nd. EJ won the cup in the center of the track. Between rivals Stronghold and Curlin's Chaos is down at the rail. Winstock has 5 lengths to make up. McVeigh is next. Having a little bit of a difficult time is McVeigh. And another 2 back to Tasuto. They move on to the backstretch, and it's Tapelo and Umberto Rispoli setting the tempo. Imagination gliding up to him in 2nd, and EJ won the cup is 3 wide in 3rd. Another 3 back to Stronghold, who's patiently handled 4th, 3.5 lengths off the pace at this stage. Winstock is 5th past the half-mile pole. Curlin's Chaos down at the rail. The 2 trailers are Tasuto and McVeigh. Heading to the 3/8 pole, Tapelo, Imagination yet to be called on, a length and a half back 2nd. Stronghold awaiting racing room. He's just inside. EJ won the cup. Then Curlin's Chaos Winstock, another three to Tesuto and McVeigh. Imagination making his move past the quarter pole. EJ won the cup, running a good race on the outside. Tapolo is down at the rail, and Stronghold won from the outside. A driving finish. Stronghold bursts through between horses and is up to take the lead at the furlong pole. Imagination trying to match strides with him, and EJ won the cup in third. It's Imagination and Stronghold nose and nose in the Santa Anita Derby. Stronghold just in front, and Stronghold prevails under Antonio Frasu.
And is Stronghold getting the job done? 89 the winning buyer, 640 the winning mutual. And two things that I'll bring up about you when you say you want to protect yourself against, you know, Baffert and Hernandez. And listen, people do that all the time, but they'll do it with favorites. And I think that if you're going to go four deep, but you're like, man, I can't let that 4-5 beat me, just skip the race and play the pick four if you're playing a pick five. Like, don't make yourself go five deep just to not get knocked out in that first leg. And that's something that's so important. I think that they ran numbers in whatever book it was, and it might have even been the newest Barry Meadow book, of they don't, nobody wants to get beaten that first leg of whatever pick sequence it is. So they almost just add extra horses just to, you know, make sure they can survive, and then they get knocked out next race or whatever. So I've always said that, you know, if you're not going to play those type of races, and listen, at least try to find a way to get value. Obviously, double prices are different than compared to what they're putting in for the pick five. But I just think that when you look in these type of races and you're seeing horses, you know, take money, or you hear a lot of people talking, like, oh, I want to survive this leg, you can kind of find value in other pools around there. And the fact that you brought up Chad Brown and Phil D'Amato, when I first started handicapping Santa Anita, I was a New York guy. Scott Shapiro was looking for somebody. I said, okay, I'll do it. Within 3 weeks, I just said, look at Chad Brown as Phil D'Amato, and I was going to be fine. And I think he was ended up being my favorite trainer for that first meet. And I just, if you're watching any track, you can kind of just pick up on certain guys, and you'll find those same guys in the West Coast, the Midwest, South, doesn't matter. You'll kind of encompass that type of idea. And I think that's a really strong idea for someone who is just getting into the game, but likes to watch a lot, maybe on TVG or whatever. Find certain trainers, and then you'll like understand as you go to other tracks, oh, this guy's kind of like this guy, and it'll make a lot of sense going forward. But man, what a race by Stronghold. Gets the job done. The workouts, obviously, I'm going to say, he looked so good out there. And listen, Phil D'Amato's got a nice one on his hand.
He certainly does. Can I just recap a couple of things that you mentioned that I thought were very interesting?
Yeah.
First off, hat tip to Scott Shapiro. You know, we know he's moving on to another chapter, but I love Scott. He does so much, such good work. He's a great handicapper. He's a great analyst. And I got to spend a lot of time with him when he was out here in Del Mar. Mm-hmm. And I just wish him the best in his next chapter. And second of all, you know, if you look at the way I had a favorite and a price, favorite and a second choice, I'm not doing anything super clever here. You know, when we're talking about the race, you tried to beat the favorite in both legs. And more often than not, that is the right strategy to do, you know. Went back and said, you know, sometimes I'm stubborn that way. But yeah, I mean, that is smart. And one last point I want to make based on something you said, you are 100% correct. If you can beat the favorite in the first leg of a multi-race sequence, pick four, pick five, you are getting extra value.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, no one wants to get beat in that first leg. So they'll use the favorite and four other horses. So automatically you have an edge if you're against the favorite and you're, you know, able to beat the favorite with just your horses, because there's going to be so many dead tickets out there after the first leg, but you know, people want that protection. So especially if you can single, like if you had started the pick four and you singled Get the Money, you know, a 6-1 morning line, that's a great play.
Yeah.
You know, obviously she didn't win that race, but that's a great play because everybody had Silver Bullet, AG Bullet on their ticket. So you're not getting any value. In fact, you're probably depleting your value if you're using AG Bullet and a couple of other horses. So I just wanted to point that out. That's why I liked talking about this sequence so much, because there are things that you can pick up and learn, you know, based on going back and seeing how you actually played the races. And then the one last thing I want to say is just turning for home. I was ready to throw my program down when EJ won the cup, was right there in contention. And I'm thinking to myself, no, you know how many times I bet this horse, you know, sprinting and on the turf. And then all of a sudden this horse is going to loom up and challenge Imagination and Stronghold. Fortunately, the horse flattened out and, you know, it didn't, didn't contend with those two, but what a race. Didn't Imagination and Stronghold really throw it down through the whole length of the stretch? It was exciting. The whole crowd went nuts at the finish of that race at Santa Anita.
These are the kind of races that we need, you know, and listen, everyone talks, you know, the Songbird races, all these other amazing races. As long as you have two good graded stake horses winning and going down to the wire and having it be this type of finish, we're going to get more fans in the game. Listen, the gambling part of it's hard, but a lot of times, you know, people just go out there. My mom will put a few bucks down on whatever she thinks she likes, but for the most part, she's out there to watch the horses and just, you know, have a nice day. The one thing I do want to tend about, something that you had talked about, if we're just talking about this three-race sequence right now, I missed in the first leg. I hit for 640 here. If I'm just betting regular standard $2, you know, I'm up 240. If we go into the last race, listen, I'm still positive. Even if I go, you know, 1 for 3, I'll be, you know, just a little bit of a smidge up. But if you can really focus on, listen, 10 race cards, 12 race cards, just find half of the races that you think make sense to play. And you'll be surprised if you're not playing multi-leg and you're just doing across the board, et cetera, stuff like that, how much more your bankroll will improve because you're playing less races. It's hard enough. Listen, I'm a big-time sports bettor now, too. The amount of one-run games in baseball I've lost so far to start off this season has me putting a fist through the wall that I just cannot get these run lines over. But that's a podcast for another day. And I just think going forward, if you just see this, I've tried two value horses. I'm going to have a value horse in this next race, but I'm up a little bit and trying to keep improving my position. But with that, let's move on to the last race, the pod race number 11. It's an optional 50 N1X, 1 mile on the turf. We're going to go with two horses in this race, so if I end up missing, I will be a little bit of a negative on the good old bankroll. But I thought Alligito for Mark Glatt. Mark's always one who I kind of thought was more of a dirt guy than is a turf guy. Listen, 17% with $1.62 isn't that bad. But when you look back at the last time this guy cut back from 1.25 miles to 1 mile, improved the buyer figure a little bit from 85 to an 88, did run second at 3-1. This kind of just felt like the same type of idea. There is no layoff in between, but when they can show it on the form that they can do a decent race off of big-time cutbacks like this, I want to include that one. Also stamp my passport, JJ and Leonard Powell. I just thought with this one, the first two races off the layoff at this level, he's had four shots at it. He's kind of, this is like the last shot, the last hurrah I'm giving him here. But 80-86, this one at 8-1 seemed to be the right price. And I was going to go with the two-horse Wind Dutch of the 4 and the 8. What about you, Frank?
Well, I'll tell you right now, you're a better man than me because you were able to narrow this race down to two horses. I was completely confused by this race. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about it. I ended up using 3 A's in the race and like 4 B's.
Yeah.
So I had zero opinion. And typically when that's the case, you're better off just passing the race. Obviously, I didn't pass the race because it was part of the pick four sequence, but I could not narrow this down. I gave Sydney Street a shot to come running from off the pace. I gave Ottoman Prince a shot. You know, Phil D'Amato, I thought last time was a downhill turf prep. It was against stakes foes. I expected that horse to just really, really fire today. I like Man Among Man. I thought that horse was prepping last time. Again, you know, prepped in a sprint race. Mandel is so good when he stretches out horses. And, you know, this horse is a 5-year-old. So if they're, you know, they could have just retired the horse, but yet they bring the horse back off a long layoff. They still think the horse has more to give. Alligato, this is a horse that I have bet so many times. And I've made this horse an A many, many times in my pick four column. And every time I do, I get a bunch of people text me and say, so you're going to give him one more chance? You're going to give him one more chance? Because he runs well all the time.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't toss the horse. I made the horse a B only because the horse fires every time. And this is a horse you would love to own. This horse coming into the race had 2 wins out of 16 tries, yet the horse has made $346,000. 5 seconds, 7/3. This horse always shows up. But the last couple of times, I didn't bet him. When he couldn't win with Tatori or Hernandez, Pratt, you know, I didn't make that horse an A. And then I, you know, one of these days, I mean, I'm telling you, I was all over the map here, Spencer. I did not have a strong opinion. I was hoping that I'd catch something here with one of my A's. You know, Sydney Street was 8-1. Ottoman Prince was 5-1. Man Among Men wasn't a great price, 3-1 on the morning line. But I really thought that that horse was a strong contender. And then again, like I said, I just threw a dart for the B spot because it was an absolute head scratcher to me. It was a really, really interesting race to look at. And again, more power to you if you were able to narrow it down to just two horses.
I think this is the type of race as well when you're going through and for people who want to try to, you know, test ideas of like doing different type of stuff with their bankroll and stuff, like make an odds line. I'm not saying do what the morning line maker is. You have 100 points. You can look it up. Barry Meadows got stuff. You just literally type in Barry Meadow odds line and you're trying to guess what every single horse will do 100 times that they raced. And what one of the main keys is for me is I try to find all the horses that will be 6-1 or, you know, lower, and whatever percentage that is, I think it's like, you know, I think if they win 20 times or something like that out of 100, and that's kind of how I make my contender list. And then I go from there. Yeah. All the other horses are X'd out crossouts. And if you can over, you know, 100 races, pick, you know, 4 out of 5 in each clip and have that one race where, you know, one of your crossouts wins, that's fine. But if you're starting to, you know, grab your contenders and finding the winner every single time, you're not going to win unless if you have, you know, one or two horses every single race, but the odds will be there to where you can, you know, maybe you won't play your top pick on your odds line because he'll be too short, but you'll be playing your second and third. And as long as you're still finding the right contenders, your top pick will win more often than your second, but the added odds on it should help you improve and become a better handicapper. These are the type of races where I think it's the perfect idea to do it. You have a solid 5-2 favorite. It's not under 2-1. It's not a super heavy favorite, but you have a million different ways you can go in this race.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And that's really why I wanted to talk about this race from a handicapping perspective. This is a great race to make a value line. I mean, you should do it for every race, really, just to give yourself an idea of what your how you value the race and to see if there's overlays or if horses you like are underlays and you might just want to skip the race. I didn't make a value line for this race, but just looking quickly at the form, I think John White pretty much nailed them.
Yeah.
I thought his morning line was very accurate. My value lines would have been very, very similar to these. I'm not sure if any of my horses would have been overlays, so I probably wouldn't have been able to step out and make a win bet. But I was just hoping I'd get one of my A's home in my pick four. One of the things we you know probably talked about in the past is that you want to play your A lines a lot heavier because mm-hmm. those are your strongest opinions. So, you know, even though it was AG Bullet and, the horse that won the Santa Anita Derby, now I'm blanking, Stronghold. You're going to have that, you know, if you have that 10 times with your other A's and you connect, you can still make some pretty, pretty good money. But again, you're more power to you if you were able to narrow this down to two horses. This is such a competitive race.
Alligato and Stamp My Passport for my two-horse Wind Dutch. Just go over your A's one more time for the people, Frank.
Yeah, let me just get back to my screen here because I was looking at the... Okay, so I had 3 Sydney Street, 6 Ottoman Prince, 7 Man Among Men, and pretty much the rest of the field is B's. So it's terrible, terrible... Terrible line for me because, like I said, I just had no idea in this race.
Let's see who gets the job done right now.
Stamp My Passport broke alertly. So did Mystification, who's up to take the lead. Here's the gray, Faustin, moving right into contention. And now Faustin is quickest. Fleet Feet moves up. And Man Among Men is up and on the pace, just off the leaders, the length to make up as they move into the first turn. They are followed by One of These Days, racing on the inside of Barely Functional. Outside of that pair comes Santo Dios, down at the rail, Stamp My Passport, who broke well and now settles. Alligato in the white colors is next, racing a couple of lengths in front of Sydney Street. Ottoman Prince and Frankie Dettori are second to last, and Short Man trails. They straighten up for the run down the backstretch, and there are three of them vying for the lead. Fleet Feet on the far outside. Fauston is racing in between rivals, and down at the rail, Mystification. Another two lengths back to an eager Santo Dios, who's trying to come after that trio. Down at the rail, Man Among Men. He's fifth, pushed along at this stage, asked for a bit more. Allegato has surfaced within five lengths of the lead, barely functional, and One of These Days just inside of him. Ottoman Prince has eight lengths to make up. He's followed by Stamp My Passport, Short Man, widest of all. Sydney Street at the back. They're at the top of the stretch, and Mystification maintains a narrow advantage. Fauston trying hard in second. Center of the course, here's Allegato and Diego Herrera coming swiftly, and Allegato with good momentum at the 16th pole is up to battle for the lead. A tough Mystification goes with him, but it will be Allegato to prevail.
And it is Allegato who gets the job done. 90, the winning buyer. Solid, solid price of 13.20 on the Wynn Mutual. And when you have all the horses, Frank, you still end up hitting the race.
Finally, Allegato wins. The day that I don't have him is an A, you know? I get so much hate texts every time I made this horse an A. And people tell me, well, he never wins. He never wins. But you know what? He's always right there. And today he won. And he ran great, actually. Like I said, this was a tough race. I thought there were some horses in here who were sitting on really, really big efforts to move forward. And Allegato beat them all. And in fact, you know, all three of my horses were no good. I didn't even really get a run. It was a very disappointing race for me. Very anticlimactic.
Something for me, and you talked about how when you do 6.5 down the hill races, you start from the outside and go inside. For me, I've always just become now a component person to I look at the odds line, and I take the favorite, and I go all the way out to the longest long shot. But I also start from the bottom of the page and work my way up. It gives you the life history of the horse. For me, it's the last 10. I know the form is the last 12. I just feel when you like, okay, we're at a specific distance going a mile, and Allegato literally has the same thing that happened five or six races back when, yes, it was off a layoff, but I consider it still the same. They went from mile and a quarter to a mile, and this horse ran well. Well, they're doing the same exact thing today. We're getting a decent price. Not that Man Among Men can't win the job, but I find it very difficult to take short-priced horses that are off slow-paced races when they were almost on the lead. That's just not the type of horse I really want when it comes down to the end of it. And by doing bottom to top, you, like I had said, you can kind of figure out patterns, etc. There's so many times that people will go top to bottom. They find the highest buyer speed figure. They see the last time the horse hit the board, and they just go with it. But that might have been the only time the horse hit the board in the last 10 tries, and it wasn't even at this track. There's so much more you can learn to take an extra 5 minutes in each race. And listen, the 40 to 1 shots, you're going to say, oh my God, the horse needs to run a minimum of a 70, and they've run a 50. Toss those guys out. Right. They'll beat you eventually. Yeah, no one time, it's going to happen. But you can take shortcuts when needed, but to really get the meat and potatoes of handicapping, look at every running line. Look at what jockeys are jumping on. I can't tell you how many times I see a jockey win with a horse five back. They jump on him now today. And, I mean, one for me is every time Christoph has Joel Rosario jump on and jump off, I feel like I'm 44% with that move. I just... he wins two back. They take him off, and the horse is like a middling, you know, 3-7-2, 4-1 type, wins the race. It's just there's so many different ways you can look at a race going bottom to top compared to top to bottom.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the PPs, they tell a story. Every horse has a story just by looking at the PPs, and you have to go bottom to the top. And, you know, just looking back at Allegato, you know, this is one of those cases where when you know, way more often than not, when you follow a circuit closely and you're familiar with the horses, that knowledge is going to play in your favor. Mm-hmm. This is an example of the opposite, because I know this horse so well, and I bet this horse so many times, and I got stubborn. But you look right there. The horse just lost it, 90 cents on the dollar with Prada, but it was a mile and a quarter. Do you know how fit this horse was coming into the race, cutting back to a mile? Like, that tells you and then if you go back and you look at even though the horse always seems to get in trouble, has problems. So, yeah, I mean, you got a great price with Herrera. You know, I think a lot of people stayed away because they saw that Pratt race losing as the favorite, and they just top-lined it. They just ignored it. So, You know, you got a really good price, and that's a great pick, man. I wish I had given Ali Gatto one more chance.
And I think that's one hardest thing. You know, a lot of people will give people shit when, like, you know, oh, you didn't have the winner in this race, but they might be only looking at Santa Anita today because of what it was, a prep day. When you watch a certain circuit day in, day out, you absolutely get horses you just become attached to. And it's one of, like, it's a killer in handicapping because, you know, the one time you don't have them and they win it 15-1, it almost blows up your whole day of handicapping and makes it worse. And I just wish that people would understand that, like, for the people who jump around and go circuit to circuit, like, for the guys who watch day in, day out, we see these horses 4 or 5 times in a session or in a meet. And, you know, we learn their tendencies. And, you know, a lot of times you have to kind of, you know, cut the rope short and not give them 5 tries. And unfortunately for Ali Gatto, he gets it done here. 13-20 probably wouldn't have made up for all the times that you missed it with him, or maybe it would have. I'm not sure.
Well, you know, 13-20 is a pretty good mutual. I would take that. So, yeah, I might not have gotten out on the horse, but it still would have made for a pretty nice day.
Can't agree more with you on that. But with this, I do want to thank my special guest, Frank Scatoni, for coming on. Frank, what do we have going on? I know we're in a little bit of a lull here before the Hollywood meet, but what do you got going on in the meantime?
Yeah, no, I'm just taking a little bit of a break, recharging my batteries. I'll probably look at some other tracks, maybe play some online contests, you know, keep my feet wet in that regard. But I'm going to enjoy my time off and come back fresh and ready to fire on April 19th when the Santa Anita quote unquote Hollywood meet comes back. And again, like I said, the vibe from last week, it was just incredible. So I'm looking forward to the Hollywood meet and then heading into Del Mar in the summertime. So, you know, it's exciting.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on. We will talk again very soon.
Thanks, Spencer.
I want to thank everyone who listens to this podcast and the rest of the podcast on the In the Money Media Network. Also want to thank my special guest, Frank Scatoni, for coming on, talking all things West Coast racing with myself. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Peter Thomas Fornatal. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Gotney. I'm Spencer Luganbuehl. We will see you next time.